Next one, item number 13, Willapa Bay Salmon Management Policy. This is a briefing as well as a public hearing, so we will be entertaining public comment later. But first, we'll hear from Steve Thiesfeld. Welcome.
Good morning, Madam Chair and Commission members, Directors Anderson and Assistant Director Storr. I'm Steve Thiesfeld, the Region 6 Fish Program. I'm here to brief you today. Here to brief you today on Willapa Bay and the development of a salmon management policy. I have the honor of being up here at the table, but I want to remind you that this is a major team effort by the staff in Region 6, both the fish management staff and the hatchery staff, and, of course, Ron Warren and Jim Scott have been instrumental in helping push this forward. Our purpose here today is to brief you on the development of the policy. As you mentioned, we're going to have a public hearing and receive comment back. We would like to seek additional direction from the Commission on development of the policy and seek Commission approval to release a draft policy for public comment. We have just under 3 weeks that we could potentially have that public comment and have something ready for the January meeting. And seek approval to develop an additional management option to evaluate. The presentation today will focus on the development schedule. Most of you recall that, but I'll refresh your memory there. The key policy issues, the aspirational objectives that we talked about in November, and the Commission guidance that was provided to the department. Some key elements of a draft policy, which I think you folks all have in front of you today, and our preliminary analysis of the options that we've been working with the stakeholders over for the past month. Our schedule, we met in November to initiate this process. The Commission provided some sideboards and guidance for us to go forward with. Today, again, ask you to consider a draft policy and the public comment. In January, we'll come back to you with a review of the public comment and ask for additional direction on that, on the policy. And recall, we're scheduled in February for the Commission to consider adoption of a policy that would set us up for the North of Falcon process and moving forward with the preseason planning for 2015. We've had significant stakeholder engagement through this process. I'm starting to develop a autopilot down to Raymond. The car wants to go there by itself. In late October, we had an open house where we tried to provide and share as much information about Willapa Bay with the stakeholders as possible. We had an ad hoc committee followed with public comment at the very end of October. November 1st, we had our first public workshop. Mid-November, we had two ad hoc committee meetings with public comment at the end of each. And I believe it was last weekend was our public workshop down in Raymond again. All of these have been held in Raymond. And our public meetings have all been on Saturdays to try to provide the greatest access to the public. Our stakeholders are anxiously awaiting the results of our analyses. Most of them are seeing them for the first time here this morning. We wrapped up our preliminary analysis late last night. So I know that they are wanting to look at these and provide some thoughts and perhaps maybe reconsider what they've offered up so far. Remind you of the basin that we're referring to. I don't know if I have a mouse. I don't have a mouse. Willapa Bay, it's composed of about six commercial management areas, 2T, 2U, 2N, 2R, and 2M. Often referred to 2T as the outer bay, so you'll probably hear that occasionally throughout the talk. Major river systems, North and Smith River, the Willapa system with Forks Creek Hatchery. Note how far up Forks Creek Hatchery is from the bay. Palix, the Nema, Nacelle, and sorry. And this is Bear River down here. Nima Hatchery and Nacelle Hatchery. Why are we here? We have a need to increase our conservation focus. We'll talk a little bit about the major conservation issues briefly. Try to restore and maintain our public trust and clarify the sharing of the impacts amongst the sectors, the fishing sectors. Willapa Bay Chinook is likely the key conservation issue within the bay. We also have some concerns with Chum. However, Chinook is the one that's going to be the linchpin of policy development as we move forward. Prior to 2010, we were not marking the releases of Chinook, and we had very limited information about the hatchery versus natural composition on the spawning grounds in the fisheries. We assumed that we had a high proportion of hatchery origin Chinook spawning in the Nacelle and Willapa systems. Our returns of marked hatchery fish started coming back in earnest in 2010. We did indeed confirm that we had high proportions of hatchery origin spawners in the Nacelle and Willapa. And what we also found is that our true natural origin stock were declining rapidly, and about 35% of our capacity. We were not and are not meeting our broodstock standards for the number of hatchery products on the spawning grounds in most of the systems that have hatchery production right now. When we met in November, we presented some aspirational objectives that we had developed through our public process. The objectives were to describe a suite of outcomes that we would try to achieve through this policy development. We wanted to inspire innovative strategies. I think we described that as get the creative juices flowing. Promote assessment of the trade-offs between the options. We wanted to make sure folks understood these were not entitlements and that they may not all be achievable. Our objectives for conservation on Chinook side, we wanted to meet Nacelle and North spawner goals in 10 years and meet watershed-specific HSRG standards in 10 years. Coho, meet the Willapa Bay aggregate spawner goal and the broodstock standards. Chum, we wanted to meet our aggregate goal in 2017 and meet our broodstock standards. On the recreational side, we wanted to try to achieve a 25% increase in the catch relative to the 2009-2013 average. These catches represent Chinook and Coho and a sprinkling of Chum in there. For the commercial fisheries, we wanted to have an average annual ex-vessel value of $900,000, which would be about the 2009 to 2013 average. I will say there's been a lot of confusion that some folks have taken that as a cap on where the commercial fishery could be and that we would take actions to close fisheries if they had achieved $900,000. Just clarify that is an average annual and it would fluctuate based upon the abundance of fish within the bay. And again, this is what we would strive to achieve. In November, the Commission provided the Department three broad areas of guidance, policy statement and guiding principles, fishery and hatchery management options, and a request for some more information on sea ranching, and asking us to look into that. We're going to defer that discussion until January for you. So if we're hoping, pardon, Commissioner Holzmiller, no ranching discussions today. Okay. Regarding the policy statement and guiding principles, we were very clearly directed that we will implement hatchery and fishery reform policy. The Commission asked us to incorporate language that was similar to the Grays Harbor policy for transparency, communication, monitoring, enforcement, and in-season management. And in a statement that we've been thinking about a lot as we've been evaluating the options, that we need to think long-term and recognize there may be short-term disruptions, pain, and friction. The draft policy that you have in front of you has a number of key elements that we'll just briefly touch on here. I'm not going to go through the entire policy. The largest conservation statement is that we will achieve the conservation and restoration of wild salmon and steelhead in Willapa Bay and avoid ESA designation of any salmon species. Guiding principles related to conservation include, number one, manage fisheries consistent with conservation. Number six, account for catch and incidental mortality. Number seven, implement in-season conservation measures. And number nine, increase the technical rigor of our management within the bay. Public trust, the general policy statement, improve communication, information sharing, and transparency. Guiding principles number eight, we would document and distribute our management objectives, make sure everybody knew what it was we were striving to manage to, and that we would share in-season information. Number 10, that we would properly implement marked selective fisheries with monitoring and enforcement of those fisheries. Adaptive management, that we would conduct and distribute an annual fishery review. Similar to, I believe there was a comment about Grace Harbor earlier this year, earlier this meeting. Commission guidance regarding fishery and hatchery management. You asked us to look at a species priority and prioritize Chinook for recreational anglers and coho and chum for commercial fishers. You asked us to evaluate the North Bay 2T and 2U for recreational anglers, and the South Bay for commercial fishers. You also asked us to evaluate switching the primary Chinook population from the nacelle to the Willapa system. You asked us to consider enhancing chum production, both through the remote site incubators and on-station production, and utilizing water reuse systems to increase our capabilities within the hatcheries. We do have additional work to do on water reuse, and we'll be investigating that further. We also were asked to provide some options to look at and to have those options reviewed by the Fish Committee. We did provide a number of options that we will show you a very brief analysis of those here today. The first metric that we or proposal that we wanted to just set the framework of our evaluations was a baseline. Andy talked about using a number of years of baseline prior to when the current management plan went into shape. The baseline that we're going to refer to is what we projected would happen in 2014 in our analysis that you hear from us here today. What would the 2014 season look like if we continued doing that through time? Options 1A, 1B, 2A, and 2B were provided to the Fish Committee for review prior to distribution to the public. 1A and 1B have no commercial fishery prior to September 15th. 2A and 2B limited the commercial fishery till after Labor Day, or it's provided a week to 10 days of additional fishing for the commercial sector. The A series retains nacelle as the primary Chinook. B series moves it to Willapa. We had about six or seven proposals from the recreational community. We decided that we needed to reduce that down. I think you asked us to bring you back six. So we took a number of those proposals and tried to mesh them together into one, mostly based on providing something significantly different than 1A through 2B. What was in one of those proposals that might be very different than we had thought of that we could evaluate. And finally, a proposal from the commercial sector was option four. I will also note that our draft policy has alternatives that try to capture the range of those options for folks to consider. So you'll see alternatives within the draft policy that encompass the scope or the range of the options that we evaluated. The evaluation criteria, I will, for better or worse, I'm not going to go into the detail on the PDO graphs and all that that Andy did. We certainly have those and are willing to share them anytime somebody wants to sit down, but trying to get to the meat of the issues and results here today. We did use a Chinook AHA model to evaluate our criteria. We have not yet been able to run the options through a Coho and Chum AHA model, but we've done some analysis using other tools and have some preliminary results to share on the X vessel value. So the criteria that we used, commission asked us to seek a 25% increase in the recreational fishery, the X vessel value of $900,000 annually average, and our conservation objectives. Were we meeting our broodstock standard? The one that we're going to present here today is, are we meeting the PNI, the proportion of natural influence? And the second one, our spawners in years 10 through 15. And what was the average spawner number in years 10 through 15, and what percentage of the goal were we at 10 years through 15? So if we were to proceed under the baseline scenario, which again was what we planned in 2014, you can see that our Chinook sport catch would only reach about 80% of our goal. The commercial X vessel value about 65%. We can meet our PNI on nacelle broodstock, which is the primary stock. However, the far right, there's three bars there, and I'll go through this because we're going to have them on every graph. The red bar represents poor ocean conditions as we utilize the PDO information that Andy discussed earlier this morning. The black bar is kind of a recent or average ocean conditions, and the green is good ocean conditions. So under the baseline option, if we fished as we did this year, the only time we would meet nacelle spawning objectives in 15 years is if we have good ocean conditions for the next 15 years. And under poor ocean conditions, we don't even achieve 60% of our spawner objective. Is everybody following that one along? I do want to point out that we focused on sport Chinook catch in this analysis. Again, we think that's a sort of the linchpin. We will have further analyses of chum and coho catch also, but for this presentation, we're focusing on Chinook. So option 1A was the most restrictive for commercial. It had no fishing prior to September 15th, maximum of 2 days per week in the outer, upper northern bay, which we were asked to prioritize for recreational. It maintained nacelle as the primary population, and it maintained the current production at all of the facilities as they were. Under option 1A, we did get a bump in the sport Chinook catch, but we still didn't quite meet our 125% increase. We did reduce commercial X vessel value. Again, we retain our ability to meet the nacelle PNI. Under average or recent ocean conditions, we are able to just barely make our spawning goal in 10 to 15 years. If we have poor ocean conditions, poor productivity in the ocean, we won't meet it. I might be sneaking too far ahead. This is the only option that under recent ocean conditions that we meet the spawning objective in the primary stock. Option 1B is essentially the same as option 1A in terms of fishing, but it does switch the primary Chinook population from nacelle to Willapa, and it switches the 3.3 million Chinook from Forks Creek down to Nacelle and reduces Forks Creek to 400,000 Chinook production. The reason for that is to try to meet broodstock standards in what would now be Willapa as the primary stock. So under this option, Chinook catch is about half of where we want it to be. Commercial X vessel value around 43%. We have struggles to meet our P&I goal. I noted earlier how far up the Willapa, the hatchery system is. Even if we put a weir up that far, we have a significant amount of spawning below that. It would require additional staff and infrastructure to try to bring that up to our goal. We do not meet the Willapa River spawning objective for Chinook under any ocean condition. Option 2A provided more fishing opportunity for the commercial, so less restrictive, essentially opening up after Labor Day in areas 2M and 2N, trying to access maybe Chinook and some early coho down in that area. It does maintain Nacelle as the primary, and it reduces Chinook production at NEMA to increase coho and chum. Trying to catch up on my slide. Option 2A drives sport Chinook catch down considerably, most likely due to the reduction of production at NEMA. That's having a significant effect there. Commercial X vessel value is around 65%. Again, at Nacelle, we're able to meet the P&I. Under average ocean conditions, we don't meet our spawner goal in the Nacelle. If we had 15 years of really good, we could maybe get there. So option 2B, again, less restrictive for commercial. The big difference between 2A and 2B is the switch of the Nacelle primary to Willapa and the flipping of the production at the two facilities. Similar to 2A, very low Chinook catches for the sport fishery, moderate catches on the commercial. We, again, cannot meet the broodstock management with our existing abilities, and we do not meet the spawner objective under any ocean conditions. Option 3, which we're calling the recreational hybrid, again, this was the recreational community reaching across the aisle trying to help out the commercial sector. They scheduled fishing in 2M and 2N beginning as early as August 16th at 2 days per week. They did ask us to look at switching the primary stock from Nacelle to Willapa and switches production from Forks Creek to Nacelle and increases chum production in the remote stream site incubators. Again, just to be cautious, this was our melding of their options. No one person gave us this as the recreational option. The option has a very, very significant effect on Chinook, reduces it down to 20% of the aspirational objective. Commercial X vessel value is down a little bit. Again, we cannot meet the Willapa broodstock goal, and even under this one, we are nowhere near meeting our spawner goals. Option 4 was provided by the commercial sector. It provides significant commercial opportunity across all areas and spaces except the Outer Bay. There's some restrictions. It does close a large area around North River to protect North River stock Chinook. That closure would affect both sectors. It maintains the current hatchery production and maintains Nacelle as a primary Chinook population. It asks that the policy require the agency to use a 40% gillnet release rate. We're currently using about a 56% for 6-inch and 62% for 9-inch mesh. So Chinook catch on the sport side, about 50% of our objective. This option puts us as close as possible to the objective for commercial value. Again, we've always been able to meet nacelle PNI, and under no ocean conditions would we meet our spawner objective. So just briefly summarizing what we've learned from these analyses, and again, most of the audience is seeing these for the first time here today. The objectives present a significant challenge to us, extremely difficult to achieve these. Under any kind of average ocean productivity, the harvest rates have to be reduced from what we've been historically if we're going to truly achieve our spawning goals for primary production. And there is an obvious and significant interaction between how the commercial and recreational fisheries relate in terms of Chinook catch for each side. So what are our next steps? We've completed a very short briefing on what the analyses tell us. There's going to be opportunity for the public to provide comment on the draft policy later, and we will be asking for additional direction on the draft policy. We'd seek your approval to release the draft policy to the public this week. If there's any modifications you wish to make here today, we could incorporate those. We would like to seek another management option to review and analyze, perhaps look at what we've learned from the analyses so far and see what we could come up with that may strive to achieve the best of all the worlds. Recall in January, you will be able to review the public comment on the draft policy, provide additional direction to the agency for that policy. February, consider adoption. Any questions?
Thanks so much, Steve. That was excellent. Nice, clear conundrum here.
the graphs are pretty telling.
Yeah. Questions? Did the Fish Committee hear this presentation before? No. This is news to everyone.
We got a preview.
With the results of the analysis?
Yes, preliminary results. Thanks to staff,
I understand staff was working late last night putting the final touches on this and are to be commended.
Director Anderson?
Working late last night to get this information today to us today. I'm looking at option 1A versus 1B, 2A versus 2B, and in both cases, all other things being equal, which probably not. But by switching the primary population from the nacelle to the Willapa, in both cases, it looks to me like we lose ground on meeting our broodstock management piece, and we lose ground on our spawners meeting those goals.
Correct.
Is there some other influence is there something else going on, differences between those two options that's influencing that outcome besides the switching?
Part of it is the location of the hatchery in the system. Bill, again, there's a lot of spawning below the hatchery, whereas on the nacelle, the weir at the hatchery is quite low in the system. So we have the ability to pull more of those fish out of the system. In terms of the spawner numbers, I don't have a good explanation of that other than the productivity of each stream. We'll have to look further into why Willapa is harder to reach than Nacelle.
If you look at the what happens in terms of the catches, if you switch your hatchery production from the Willapa to the Nacelle, do we lose opportunity for access from a harvest perspective by moving it from one place to the other?
Yes, the analysis suggests that taking fish from Forks to Nacelle would greatly reduce the recreational fishery in the bay. And NEMA is also very important in that recreational fishery, too.
So, in what respect on the NEMA?
So on option 2B, I'm not sure about A, but 2B for sure, we reduce production at NEMA, Chinook production, to increase coho and chum. And right now the NEMA system has a very significant freshwater sport catch.
Okay.
So if we reduce that Chinook production to accommodate other species, it can greatly affect the ability to reach the objective. It's upwards of 2,000 to 3,000 fish a year in the NEMA River alone.
And in terms of the, if you go to your next step slide, slide 35, the piece about, you know, given the analysis and what you see resulting from the options that are currently on the table, what we're looking for here is giving us some flexibility to work with the stakeholders to develop a limited number, maybe one, maybe two, new options given what we've learned from the analysis, and develop those over what time frame, I guess, is my question. Looking at you're going to be reviewing, we're looking at the commission reviewing the public comment on the draft policy in January or December, whatever it is today, the 13th, 14th, yeah, something like that. So we're looking at developing those one, maybe two new options in the near term, including those in the document that would be out for public review. Is that, do I have that right?
Correct. We have our work cut out for us to try to have something, an option developed, and have it analyzed and out for folks to think about prior to the January meeting, and of course the holidays in between. So,
okay. Thanks.
Okay, commissioners, any questions? I think we're eager to hear from the public now that you all have been informed about the preliminary results. You before though, Steve, I think I heard you say that these were somewhat preliminary. Explain.
Well, so we didn't get the coho AHA model till mid-afternoon yesterday. None of us have even opened it up to look and see what's in there, and we don't have the chum part of it yet. So there's some more work to do there once we have those in our hands. And so we've used some other tools to come up with chum and coho as best we can, but we don't have mostly what we're. It's the brood stock issues, and are we meeting our P&I and our PHAS, and those, that's what's going to be most helpful from the AHA model.
Okay, so. Thanks. Okay. Do we have anyone who's signed up to testify? A few people? Okay. Now I'm going to really ask for everyone's cooperation because we've got a lot of people who want to talk with us. So, once again, the commission rules are that you're allowed 3 minutes. When you hear the beeping noise, please conclude your remarks. If you don't, I'm going to have to politely interrupt you. We have enforcement in the room as well.
Do they have a gun?
Oh, Director Anderson?
Before we get started, I wanted to make one clarification.
Okay.
And I also wanted everybody to know that I looked around the room and looked at all the smiling faces out there, and I sent the enforcement officer home.
Oh.
So there's...
Okay, so...
But on the process piece, and it has to do with the the potential development of another option. Mm-hmm. And maybe I could ask, so I don't mess this up, one or both of you, Steve or Jim, to come up. Because we're looking at having the policy go out for public review we're requesting to do that as a next step following today's meeting. So that would, the policy itself would go out early next week. And so the timeline for developing a new option, we're not thinking, it's not going to be a part of the document that would go out for public review. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Okay, yeah.
So there wasn't, when they, get the paper and they open it and they're looking, where is that new one? It's because it's going to take some time. We need to get the other model, the COHO piece, up and running in order for us to do a comprehensive evaluation of what a new option might look like.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. So there'll be some blank spaces in the policy where the options will be inserted. Okay, well, thank you. So 3 minutes each. When you hear the beeping noise, that means your time is up. I'm going to call you two at a time. It'll just make it more efficient. But when you've completed your statement, we'd like you to return to your seat in the audience. Jack Hollingsworth and Alan Hollingsworth, you're up first. Oh, yeah. Sorry about that. Why don't you come up two at a time, but you're going to have to move over to the seat in front of the one mic that works. Okay, Mr. Hollingsworth.
Commission members, I've sent my proposals to the proper people, and I just want to kind of hit on a couple things. And after listening to Mr. Appleby's presentation three times now, and it's like you say, you learn more each time you hear it. He made a very good point. There's 3 or 4 years of, depending on species, of fish swimming around in the ocean due to come back to the Willapa that needs to be harvested by someone to meet whatever plan you come up with in hatchery, broodstock, and all those. So the points I would like to make today is 2T and 2U is crucial for harvesting those hatchery Chinook and hatchery Coho. And by designating Chinook as a sport priority fish, eliminates that possibility for the commercial fleet. So those fish are going to make it up to the hatchery, into the river. They're not going to be harvested. The sport fishery cannot harvest all the available hatchery fish. So the point I'd like to make is we have, and Andy has made the point at every presentation, a commercial fishery is vital to any part of your plan. Those fish has to be harvested. And a couple other points. We fished 5 days a week for coho on the Willapa in 2014. That still resulted in over 70,000 surplus coho at the hatchery facilities, plus all the natural spawning fish. So that shows that our fleet still cannot catch all the fish. They're getting by. And I guess my last point I want to stress is we must use scientific data and salmon management techniques that are consistent with statewide management plans and policies of the department. I don't feel that this plan, the way the options that we are given, is consistent with these policies. And it's just it looks to me like it's an attempt to eliminate the net fishery and give Willapa over to sport priority. Thank you.
Thank you. Hey, David Hollingsworth. Okay. Mr. Hollingsworth.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Commission members. I just got this today. This is a new one from what I had 4, 5, 6 days ago. So there are some changes that was made. Some of them are good. Some of them I can't agree with. And I'll have to go through it when I get home and send the commission members some new changes. Also, if you switch from the commercials catching the early Chinook, you're going to have to produce enough chum, if you replace them with chum, 100,000 chum is what it's going to take to replace the approximately 10,000 Chinook that's been caught before September 5th to 10th time frame. I don't think the Nacelle or NEMA has a capacity to put out that many chum. That's just for, and when you get that many chum, then the price is going to go down because there's so many fish, so then you got to produce another 30,000 or 40,000 catch. On wild Chinook, I think 10 years is too short of a time to achieve the goal. I think it needs to be 4 or 5 cycles, which would put it up 20, 25 years. And like my brother said, you need to remove some of these hatchery fish coming back the next 4 years, hatchery Chinook, so you don't keep decreasing your PNI every cycle on the spawning grounds. And it looks to me like from the presentation so far that you're going to go for the Nacelle River as a primary Chinook river. And I think that's all I have to say at this
Thank
time.
Thank you. Steve Gackey. Okay, Mr. Hollingsworth.
Good morning, Commission. Dave Hollingsworth, commercial fisherman, Willapa Bay advisor. It looks like you guys need to come up with some new objectives. What they showed us here today, it won't work. So it's up to you guys to come up with these objectives before we can even start this process. We're going to go and send this out to public comment. It's all screwed up. We don't even know what we're doing here. He showed you it won't work. Somewhere there, I would like to see the 40% mortality rate for Mark Select Fishery be a standard in the state, in the policy, written in the policy. It works on the Columbia River where there's ESA-listed fish, but you guys were hauled into court and forced to make our rate higher. No scientific reasoning, all assumptions. We need this in writing, in stone, 40%, statewide. No more screwing around. Also, Area 2N, northern boundary. I'd like to see it change. There's no recreational fishery that occurs in it. From Goose Point, I think you guys got a map in there somewhere that showed it. Goose Point to Stony Point to Piling Marker 3T and back to Ledbetter Point. Moves our northern boundary down to a bunch of sand spits, fast-moving water. Nobody recreational fishes there at all. But it gives us a little more opportunity to have a little area to spread out and get away from each other. I don't think there's anybody in this room that's ever fished there. So, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Norm Reinhardt? Mr. Gackey?
Chair Wecker, Commission members, Director Anderson, and Deputy Directors Storr and Scott. I'm Steve Gackey from Nacelle and a Willapa South Bay advisor. I had some prepared text, but what we just saw kind of threw that out with the bathwater. So I want to just share with you a frustration that I've got. What happened here today is fairly consistent with what's been happening. We're being given information at the meeting and then asked to comment on it. My brain doesn't work like that. I need time to process, research, talk to folks. So it's been very, very difficult process for us. So just understand that, and I'm just going to defer any further comments until I get some real information I can comment on. But with that said, Miranda, I would like to make a comment to the director, if you don't mind. Phil, I've been going to the North Falcon meetings for 5 years, an advisor for 3. Thank you for that appointment. We've never spoke directly, one-on-one, but when I read that statement that you released on Billy Frank Jr.'s passing, that told me a great deal about who you were as a person, and I believe a manager, and I just want to thank you for your service and wish you well.
Okay. Thank you for that. Ross Barkhurst. Okay, Mr. Reinhart.
Good morning, Commissioners, Director and Assistant Director. I come here somewhat overdressed. I'm headed to a wedding.
Oh.
But I felt that I would avail myself of a tie once a year to at least amuse us. I come here to ask to make a statement. I'm a member of the ad hoc committee down there at Willapa Bay. And the goals and objectives that you have set for us are on an extremely aggressive schedule. And one of the things on this ad hoc committee, to say that it's been contentious, I'm being generous to the committee members. It's been the hardest committee that I've ever sat on, and Phil, you know I sit on 5 of them. So it's been a challenge. It's been also almost 1,200 miles on my truck going from Port Orchard to Raymond, all those meetings and then a few extra ones. So what I'm here to ask is that you've given the state a very aggressive schedule. We just got to look at an AHA model this morning, and I've seen this presentation before, and everybody on this ad hoc committee has been waiting for that. And we get it shown to us the first thing. We'd like to see it in real time right there. So I would ask that I know that you want a policy by February. Phil addressed it in that you want to put out this policy for public comment, but I believe all the ad hoc members, no matter what our opinion, want to give you our comments on a policy that when you put it out serves the purpose you want, and that we might not be able to accomplish that for you given this timeline. I would ask that you consider looking at perhaps stepping that timeline back perhaps a month. I know myself, I'm willing to make more trips to Raymond in order to give the citizens of this state the best possible salmon policy that we can do. Willapa has the ability to be a model for the rest of the state. Let's do it right, and let's not rush it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Steve Gray. Hey, Mr. Barkhurst.
Thank you. I appreciate the fact that this effort to bring salmon management policy to Willapa Drainage is underway and that you all initiated it. Appreciate the chance to be on the ad hoc committee. Thank you. It was a thrill to hear that we had a recreational and priority in the same sentence at your last meeting, along with conservation. After seeing these models today, I would temper that a little bit with the realization that if that is the priority we end up with, that it's the smallest number of – it's one species out of 3, and it's the smallest numbers of fish that we have, and that it looks like we're in an Appalachian-style P&I depress zone down there if we're to maintain, let alone increase, our harvest. We've learned a lot on this committee. Most of us have had 3 discussions with Andy now, and it gets better every time. But we have a natural origin recruit problem. They're being overwhelmed on the gravel. We need to run more scenarios. I haven't been able to do that until last night, I guess. So I have some hope. These scenarios that we're run all have one thing in common, and that is that we run commercial fishing up and down, but we don't address enhancing opportunities for recreational fishermen. Hard to increase your harvest when you're trying to meet hatchery standards and you're not enhancing opportunities. There are places that that can be done. There's WDFW land on good fishing holes with no parking space. There are stretches of rivers that are closed. These need to get into some of these scenarios somehow. Christmas is coming, and what we're hoping on the recreational side is that we're not about to get a lump of coal. If necessary, we would hope that you would be flexible with your priorities, just as we need to be flexible on a lot of things. I would keep in mind that one of the H's is habitat, and I found out in one of our Andy lectures that the estuary is not modeled, a big piece of the habitat that's not modeled. When we're trying to get more hatchery, more wild fish into the bay, these are the ones that use the estuary more than the hatchery ones do. Particularly when we're trying to really emphasize a commercial priority for chum, and we recognize that chum are the ones that spend almost 100% of their juvenile life in the estuary, and AHA does not model that part. That's something that we need to look out for also. Thank you.
Thank you. Marlissa? Duggan? Okay, Mr. Gray.
Steve Gray, one of the owners of a Bellboy Crab Company. We do a lot of fish, so we're concerned about this. I've spent over 45 years fishing hard in Willapa Bay. I have a couple sons that are very good fishermen. They'd be here, but they're crab fishing. Frustrated. There's a number of issues here that the first one, I guess, is what Norman said. Several of us on this advisory committee, which I haven't been on for, I think, the beginning of time, as well as the Crab Advisory Committee. I think we need more time, a month or two. This is very important to our lives. This is what we do. We fish in Alaska. We fish here. We crab fish. This is our home because we fish here. If you eliminate the commercial fishery down to almost nothing, you kind of chop the fingers out of the glove, and pretty soon the glove's gone. Come on down to El Waco and Long Beach like Butch Smith told you. Look around. The fishing industry is what there really is. There's not much left. I think Andy did a good job. I listened to him a couple times. I think he's got a lot of stuff together. I can remember 5 or 6 years ago, Phil, when you came to the first advisory meeting, not first, but you first mentioned, you said, we're going to go with the Hatchery Provision Revision Practices Act. And we went through that. You wanted one river. You wanted it to be in conjunction with what went on in Grays Harbor, which was going to be the Chehalis River, but I don't think anything's happened there. I may be wrong. I can remember telling you at the time that what you're going to do to us in a commercial fishery is as you take the Nacelle River and you stop the production from 6 million, 3 million, 2 million down to 500,000 or whatever, you will move our fishery out into the lower part of the bay and we'll have a lot of conflict with the sport fishery. We as a commercial fishery have tried my whole life to get along with, as Miranda says, oh my God, we got conflict. We have tried desperately to eliminate conflict. And I remember telling you, when you move us out of that Nacelle River system and so forth down to the deep part of the bay, Area 2T, so forth, we will have nothing but conflict. And we will be here to see if we can't eliminate the commercial fishery. We're here. How do we solve that? If you were a commercial fisherman, how do we solve that? This is what we do for a living. The sport fishery can fish 5 months, I'm sure. They can fish every single day, 30 hours a day. They can fish in every inch of the Willapa Bay water. They can fish in every single stream that's there. And when they came to us and said, we'd like to have two poles. We don't care if you have three. Stick one between your legs. Whatever. What can we do to increase this sport fishery 25%? Well, probably the one area, like I think somebody had on the map, Lower Bay, the 2T area, that's probably the primary area where sports fishermen like to fish. You're the first in line. You're right down to the door. I think we have pretty well eliminated most of the commercial fishery in 2T. If that's what we need to do, I suppose we can go there. What do we do with 2U? That's the one above it. This is pretty important, Miranda, and I think I want to get this across, if you don't mind some of this stuff. We do everything we can to probably give up some of our fishery to maintain a fishery that would work. We really felt you needed to move the primary river to North River or Willapaw River. Nassau River, and you can check it out, has a sandstone bottom, and the gravel shifts all over, and it doesn't do much for spawning. We told Phil that at the time when we had that meeting, you're going to watch your natural production return go right on down the hill, and it's done that.
Okay.
That's where we are.
Thank you.
There's number of things.
There's going to be more time for comments. Thanks a lot. Francis Estelita. Okay, Ms. Duggan.
Thank you, Commissioners.
The mic.
I'll laugh. I'll have to talk really slow. My husband says my voice projects like a megaphone without this thing, so I might have to push it back just a bit. Commissioners, thank you for the opportunity to speak here today. My name is Marlisa Dugan, and I'm a member of the Willapaw Bay Advisory Council. I've been on the council, privileged to sit there for the last 4 years, and I only recently had an opportunity to hear Andy's speech earlier this year. Wow, what an eye-opener that was. I can't thank him enough for bringing those points to everybody's attention and giving us an opportunity to work with that, to bring you a model that maybe will work. I speak for all of the advisory members, I think, when we say we're really frustrated. There's been a lot of non-functional, contentious meetings where we're just spinning our wheels, and I think that with this model in place that we should be able to provide you with something that you can work with. I feel as though I have let you down personally, that I can't provide you with information on any particular model that was presented previously, because once we saw Andy's presentation, how could we make a recommendation with something that wouldn't work? And I certainly had one or two models that were presented that I felt that I could get behind to work with maybe some modest modifications to it. While I'm here, I just want to reiterate the importance of the economical value of recreational fishing. Please keep this in mind as you work with budget cuts, which I know are painful and certainly on your agenda in 2015. Please remember that freshwater fishing is the largest financial contributor to your general fund with licensing and fees, with an opportunity, a huge opportunity for growth in our future. I represent this little river called the North Nema, where we have been able to promote recreational fishing there, and clearly catch record shows that we have an amazing opportunity there. As we get ready to perhaps restructure hatchery allocations, please remember that we need to keep that fishery viable, and let's not reduce production there to where it significantly impacts an already successful fishery. I would like to make a couple of comments. One of the gentlemen, the commercial fisheries, offered and recommended that we change the boundary in 2N. I'm against that. The unique layout of the Willapaw Bay would significantly impact that small recreational fisheries that's happening there. It's already impacted tremendously by what they do in 2N. We know when they're there, and we know when there's a gap. The fish come in when they're gone. When they're there, we're not getting anything. So we're already working with that. And there certainly is room to work with the commercial fisheries in our end of the bay. I don't believe that we have to do without them. I just simply believe that we need to make sure that we continue to have enough. Thank you.
Thank you. Ryan Kramer. Mr. Estelita.
A familiar face to most of you. Francis Estelito from Aberdeen. I came with some pseudo-prepared comments that sort of all change after we saw Mr. Tiesfeld's presentation running the various options through the AHA that first evaluation to see how well we were going to hit our management objective, our aspirational objectives. But let me back up for just a second. I did want to say one thing. I want to thank the commission for its initial guidance prioritizing Willapa Bay Chinook to the recreational fishery, particularly the historically popular fishing areas in 2T and 2U. That's really important to us, and I would just encourage us to keep that focus moving forward. I want to step back a little bit as one of the people who testified in favor of flipping the primary population. The new analysis now really shows that that really doesn't help us to achieve the management objectives, and it'd be hard to stump for that at this juncture in time. But I would still say that after looking at another, perhaps one or two Chinook life cycles of data, we've heard some concerns even from the commercial side about shifting gravel in a cell. Is that really the most productive place to go? I think we should keep this adaptive management philosophy open. That if we're not seeing what we want to see, that we could still consider moving that primary population. It's taking a step back, but you know, we want to get it right. We want to do what's right for the resource. We want to do what's right for the greatest, highest, and best use of that resource from an economic standpoint to all the citizens of the state. And one final comment I would like to make is, it's been stressed that none of this can work without a functioning commercial and recreational fishery, you know, take on the hatchery fish. Otherwise, you just can't remove them. But what also needs to be said is that take happens long before the fish get here. 70-75% of the take happens in Alaska and BC, and commercial fishing is represented very well in that take. So that's all I have to say. Okay.
Thank you. Tim Hamilton. Okay, Mr. Kramer.
So I would like to thank the commission for the opportunity to speak. I'm new to the ad hoc board that's been meeting discussing policy in Willapa Bay, and it's only recently that I've developed an appreciation for the complexity of the situation. I would first off like to thank all the other ad hoc people that have served. I did not appreciate what the difficulties have been. Anyhow, going forward, I'm kind of a data guy, and I've taken a deep dive into the data, and it's become very clear to me that there's a lot of uncertainties here, and that I think we need to craft a policy that's got some flexibility, particularly on the conservation side. One other thing, I should credit the staff for being extremely responsive and sharing all manner of data and records. The transparency has been fantastic. And I think, you know, the guidance and options presented or given to us by the commission in the previous meeting make it pretty clear on the allocation side that we have the necessary elements for a deliberate decision-making process. On the conservation side, it seems like every issue raises more questions, and as you dig deeper, things become less and less clear. You know, I think the discussion of switching primary from nacelle to Willapa is a good example of that. And the deeper you dig, the more the data at this time doesn't really support switching, but I think we need more information. There's never been a quantitative analysis of the habitat, and I think that's going to be key. If we're going to adapt a natural origin stock to one of these streams, we want to pick the stream with the best habitat. And right now, there is no data addressing that. This has obviously been done in the Columbia River Tribs, and there's, you know, a sophisticated analysis of the habitat. In this case, it's really not very sophisticated, and I think when we write this policy, we want to have some flexibility in there so that going down the road, as data comes to light, maybe we do want to switch. I don't think that's merited right now, but maybe we do somewhere. You know, I think we're, what, a fish generation, maybe a fish and a half generation into the process. And in the cell, there's been a bunch of adaptation that's already happened, hopefully, and I don't think we want to abandon that because we're further down the road there than we would be if we switched. And then lastly, I'd just like to echo something that Francis just said, which is that there is certainly a large amount of commercial harvest already occurring on the Willapa Bay fish in these northern intercept fisheries. So I do think that Andy's point is well taken. You need to harvest those fish, but they are getting mostly already harvested, whether or not we do anything or not. It's out of our control. Thank you.
John Campbell, Mr. Hamilton.
Madam Chairman, members of the Commission, my name is Tim Hamilton. I'm the president of the Twin Harbors Fish and Wildlife Advocacy, and I sit as an ad hoc member. And it has been a lot of drives to Raymond. We took our organization, though we often recreationally fish, took a conservation-first approach to this whole notion. And we were somewhat disappointed to see the aspirational goals. Our aspirational goals for harvest is what led us to dig the hole we're in now. And so when we went through the thought of this, it turned the light bulbs on for me when I saw AHA 2, because I'd learned a lot of this in volunteerism and hatcheries and so on, but I never could get the dots connected exactly the right way, and this really helped me a lot. We also realized, and what was real pleasing to us, unfortunately, is we saw this presentation earlier, before it was ever created. We saw it in our minds. I went back to the department and said, all these aspirational goals will not fit. Why don't we start first and decide, we have two productions, hatcheries and gravel. What are our capabilities in the gravel? What are our facilities? What are our strengths? What are our weaknesses? How fast can we recover the gravel? Because it's a key, they're partners. And then once we've done all of that, why don't we ask the question of how many fish are left and available for harvest? And in turn, what we did was he said, how many do you want to catch? And you'll see now we're all sitting in a position where, unfortunately, the meeting that happened today should have happened before we started the ad hoc committee. So we're looking forward to a review, and we hope it all works well. Stay with us. Be patient. We think we can be there. I know that our group and the people we're working with are going to be there at the finish line with you. But one more time, you first have to manage the fish for conservation standards, and we have the ability to do that in Willapa. It's just we dug one heck of a hole. And as far as hatchery return fish, shortly we'll hope to have a paper out in front of you to explain a lot of research we've done on the return of hatchery surplus. Believe it or not, the math shows it's the single most valuable fish we have in the entire bay is the one that returns to the hatchery as surplus. With that, I thank you. Keep an open mind.
Okay. Bob Lake, Mr. Campbell.
Madam Chair, Commissioners, my name's John Campbell. I'm just a recreational fisherman. I live in Aberdeen, and I occasionally fish in Willapa and Grays Harbor. I guess the reason I came down is I really did want to thank the Commission for recognizing the social and economic value of recreational fishing in Washington. And stepping back, the Grays Harbor Management Plan, I say it's at least partially responsible for what was by far the best recreational success rate in over a decade. This was a fabulous year. And I guess I'd admit that a run size that was quite a bit larger than forecast also helped. In my view, the Willapa plan has generally been to maximize hatchery production in order to justify maximizing gillnet harvest. It's only had a small consideration for natural origin fish or recreational fishing throughout time. Based on what I have seen, I'm confident the Commission's going to do more than just tweak the status quo. We really need a plan that uses hatchery science to drive recovery of natural origin fish and continues to recognize the significant social and economic benefits of recreational fishing. As a matter of the public, I'd like to applaud your guidance to date. I think it's wonderful. And thank you for your time and the opportunity to speak, and happy holidays.
Thank you. Andy Marks.
Good morning. Good morning, Commissioner Wacker. Thanks for reminding me. First of all, I'd like to read parts of a letter. You guys got it. I handed it out, that along with our scientific review package. I won't get into that, and it's quite detailed. But I'm going to read something. This is from Andy Mitby, an expert, excerpt out of his letter. The policy drafts has been made exclusion that the reduction in Chinook fishing and areas can be compensated in a chum fishery. There would have to be a catch of 170,000 chum to compensate for the 13,600 Chinook that were harvested in the 2014 season. The fleet was able to harvest 7,000 fish in a single day on a run of about 150,000 fish. Fishing 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, during all areas. A chum run cannot account for the loss of the Chinook fishery. This is providing that the state is able to reduce at a minimum of 280,000 adult chum. So look at those numbers, very extreme. I'm also involved with the Regional Enhancement Group. We do not have the eggs for the chum production to bring that up to that level at this point in time. And also, the recs keep saying they want 25% increase on harvest. They're already fishing 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, almost 6 months out of the year. Now, how do you get them more time? Because that's what it's going to take. This opportunity is there. We've had tremendous surpluses on Chinook and really a lot of tremendous coho surpluses this year at the hatcheries. We need to look at something that will work this out. But to increase the recreational harvest seems next to impossible to me. I don't know how you're going to do it because you don't have any more time in a day. And also, in that study we sent in to you, that we would like to see a 40% mortality rate on the net catches like used in the Columbia River and all the data that's current. And I think that's a fair option. And also, Marlisa spoke on the 2N, us wanting to expand 2N out to 3T and that, which is a little expansion, true. Not much. But the NEMA is very confined, and the only place that you can fish on a NEMA is her property and down. The property owners above it won't let anybody on her property, period. And there's been a real argument going on there. And I just would like to say, Phil's left now, but I was going to thank him for his service.
He's here. Yeah.
So good. I was going to thank him for his service that he's done for a number of years. And we haven't agreed on everything, but he has actually been very straightforward and been actually a pleasure to work with. So thanks, Phil.
Thank you. Yeah. Frank Hall and Mr. Marks.
Good morning. My name is Andy Marks. Thank you, Chair Wecker and the commissioners, for your service and for your time. I want to I didn't come here with prepared comments. I have an observation or two. Staff has done great work, a lot of hard work on this process. I've attended one of the meetings down in Willapa Bay, which was exciting. It was the highlight of my day that week, maybe the month. I would like to make an observation. The aspirational goals. You have adopted a recreational priority policy for the budget. CCA has been unwavering in our support of achieving conservation goals. I received a copy of the economic analysis for the Willapa Bay fisheries that was presented in a meeting that I was not able to attend. But the one thing I would like to toss out is I don't see how the aspirational goals fit in the discussion, and I don't know where those came from. Okay. I think it's pretty clear that there is great value in the recreational fishery, which is driven by meaningful opportunity, which means do sportsmen have a perception that there is a chance to catch fish when they go out? And I think it's also clear that the recreational fishery is not going to be able to catch the hatchery fish necessary to achieve escapement goals and proper proportion of natural origin broodstock on the spawning beds. So I would like to have just pose the question of where the aspirational goals fit and suggest that once you establish the conservation goals for the area and for those hatcheries, that you look at the economics and how to maximize the economics in the region, which is very important, and use both tools, because we know that there is going to be both a recreational fishery and a commercial fishery. There needs to be to accomplish those goals. And Merry Christmas. Thank you. And I'd like to also take the opportunity to thank Phil for his service.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Hawk.
Yes. Thank you for this chance to speak. I'll take this opportunity. I say with some pride that I actually was a member of the original science group that met with Senator Gordon, along with Commissioner Mankin, that got hatchery reform started. What I would like to point out, and I think that, again, Commissioner Mankin touched on this earlier, the uniqueness of the opportunity in Willapa Bay. There are no ESA problems, no treaty Indian issues to deal with, and no interstate compacts to deal with. So you have a real unique opportunity as a commission, as an agency, to do something for the citizens of Washington State. I think it's a wonderful opportunity that we all have. In addition to that, what I would like to suggest is that in reviewing these various options, that you consider the overall impacts of the effects. Commercial goals, that makes sense to me, but you need to look at overall the economic effects of to the people of the state of Washington in arriving at these conclusions. I also think that it's consistent with the commission policies involving hatchery reform and fishery reform. It seems to me that developing commercial fishing techniques that have a lower catch of bycatch rate, so that you can selectively target these excess hatchery fish, would do a great deal toward achieving the objectives of the overall policy. Thank you very much. And again, Phil, thanks for your service as well.
Thank you. That concludes the public hearing on this item for this meeting. Thank you all. You all did an excellent job representing your viewpoints and sticking with the time frame allowed. So thanks for your participation. We have one more major item on our agenda, which we'll move right into. Hope you'll stay. Listen to our discussion. Director Anderson?
I'm sorry if I'm not, if I've... So we have the next steps
okay.
to consider before you move to your next agenda item.
Okay.
And I had a few, I don't know if they're remarks or suggestions or both. So we find ourselves, I think, in a all of us that are here to talk about the Willapa Bay policy find ourselves in a bit of a difficult position here today because of the timing in which we had the model up and running for Chinook. We still don't have it. I mean, we haven't had a chance to really use it or look at it or evaluate the alternatives on the coho piece. And so I've been contemplating what kind of a suggestion to make in terms of how to move forward. We were here asking for approval to send the policy out for public review. We'll be coming back in January hearing, which there will be additional public comment to the commission at the January meeting, providing any additional policy direction or additional direction on the policy at that time. and then in February be ready to consider the adoption of the policy. We're also asking, particularly based on the results of the analysis, at least on the Chinook side, and everybody saw the output of those that analysis, that we be provided the flexibility to look at development of an additional option or options that come closer to meeting our conservation objectives, as well as looking once at one or ones that meet the come closer to meeting the aspirational objectives to the extent that that's possible while meeting our conservation objectives. Thinking about the process, if we don't have that, so I was reading through the policy. There's a lot of elements of the policy that are ready for public comment. There are other a smaller set of the pieces that are in the policy that I think people are going to need to look at the outputs of the model in order to form their comments to the commission about those elements of the policy. If we get to January and we develop that option over the course of the next whatever it is, week, 2 weeks, it's going to put the public in a difficult position, I think, in order to provide that meaningful comment on the policy. So I'm thinking of a revision in our process. And it would go something like this. We would get the additional option or options developed, have those ready for review between now and the January meeting. And then we would leave open the potential of adopting the policy in February, but in the event that in January we look at things and we're thinking to ourselves, given what that additional option and the evaluation of the model, we may need an additional meeting. Now, you've moved your – I'm not – this isn't a criticism – but we've moved the March Fish and Wildlife Commission meeting to a week later than normally is. It's scheduled for the 19th and 20th of March. So we, as a backup, we could delay final adoption of the policy until that time. Now, obviously, we're slamming into the middle of North Falcon when we do that. But we're either going to jam the process at the front end here, not allow people adequate opportunity to make thoughtful comments because we don't have the results of the model and the new options, or we're going to squeeze ourselves on the other end. So we're going to get potentially squeezed on either end. I'd frankly rather get squeezed on the back end of this and have a good process that leads to a new policy by which you're going to manage your fisheries in 2015 than I would jam it on this on the front end and not provide that kind of meaningful public opportunity and working with our advisors and all that goes into that. There's another element to think about which makes the March thing, if that's the way it plays out, workable, and that is that the April council meeting is a week later than that normally is too, so it's backed up. I can't remember the dates. It's like on the 12th or something like that of April. So we've got a little bit more room on the back end of the end of the North Falcon process this year than we normally do. So bottom line is my recommendation would be to go ahead and put this out for public review, note and making the appropriate notations that that we're in the process of developing some additional management alternatives. Keep the public comment period open after the January meeting once we have those additional alternatives developed so that people can comment between now and January. They can do that and comment after that, after the additional alternatives are developed, or one or both. We can make an evaluation as we go, as we come out of the January meeting, if we think we're going to be ready for a February decision, or we can have as a backup plan an extension to make the decision in March. Understanding that that's going to squeeze us a little bit in the North Falcon process, but again, I'd rather get squeezed on that end than get squeeze the process on the front end in terms of developing this policy that hopefully is going to serve us for a number of years.
March meetings in Eastern Washington.
Oh, I was also reminded the March meetings in Eastern Washington.
Yes.
Everything can't be perfect. That's sure. But
this is complicated, and we do have to do it right. I mean, we've heard from the public how much this is important to everyone, so we just need to get it right. And sounds like there's a lot of moving pieces. One of the thoughts that came to my mind is this idea of a weir, and sometimes weirs are more effective than other times, and so isn't there some opportunity to look at other ways to remove hatchery fish than just harvest? How is that being factored in?
In the Willapa specifically?
Yeah, in the context of these primary streams.
Yeah, we considered the option of putting a weir in the Willapa. Obviously, there's financial and staffing mm-hmm. issues of doing so. Mm-hmm. But it's so far up the river mm-hmm. that it's still going to be difficult to really remove a large portion of the hatchery products from the river. A significant amount of spawning would occur below that weir. That's where the nacelle is, frankly, a better option for using a weir. It doesn't mean we can't do it in Willapa. It would improve our broodstock management, but yeah. It comes at a cost. But we could certainly evaluate what that would be.
Yeah. We've had a little conversation about that. So what do you think, commissioners? I can't disagree with the director's analysis that we need to get this right. We need to take more time, perhaps, a lot more analysis, and we certainly want to give the public an opportunity to know what options are on the table, to understand those options, have time to look at them. So, Commissioner Schmitten?
We're still thinking, but I'll make a comment. Mm-hmm. We're really fortunate to have Phil with us mm-hmm. and guide us through occasions like this of looking ahead. And there's no doubt that we need to create a new hybrid with the information we've received today. Secondly, the public needs and have a right to spend some time and understand what that means to them. Third, I was surprised that we may have got this process a little backwards, because we all talk about conservation. Frankly, when I heard that to meet both the broodstock and the spawning escapement goals or objectives, we have to reduce harvest. Understand that. If we believe in conservation, that's going to be the likelihood. So, and then just a fourth one, it seems to be overlooked a little bit. I think increasing the escapement or enhancement, I'm sorry, for both coho and chum is a good thing. It's not a trade-off thing. You have to think long-term. That's probably two cycles out. But frankly, that is a benefit thing, not a targeted only fishery. Yeah, some may say 50 cents chum on a low run, it's not worth going out for. I mean, our population continues to increase. Our people like and want fish. It won't always be 50 cents, and frankly, if you can provide a larger harvest, it's going to be, I think, a good backup and coho for both parties. I don't see little, if any, effort in all four options that we've had to increase coho. I see a little bit for in-stream work on chum, but so think about those two. That's what I have to say.
Okay. Any other comments from commissioners? We do have to give some guidance. I'm not hearing any objection. I think there's widespread support for what you've said, Director Anderson. Let's get this process right. If it takes another month, that's fine.
So the one question that I would, if I could, mm-hmm. ask Steve and Jim, so that I think going forward, I mean, between now and January, I think we understand what we'll be doing relative to the development of the additional alternative or alternatives, right? Mm-hmm. And we're going to, when's your next, can I have a little dialogue here? Sure. When's your next meeting with the advisors?
We haven't scheduled that. We've been waiting to see where we got to today.
But you would have one between now and the January meeting, correct?
We would try to squeeze something in there given the holiday schedule.
Yeah, okay. So, so I think the question, the one remaining question in my mind is, do we put this thing out for public review now, mm-hmm. or do we wait, come back to the January commission meeting when we're I think you will be able to make a more informed decision as well as we would be able to make a more informed recommendation. Terms of putting the policy out. Jim, I'm looking at you because I'm too. So my thinking is that we would wait until January to put it out after we've got the additional alternative developed. And then give that time frame between January and probably the end of January to get your public comments back in. Having us ability to compile those so that we can be ready to react to those with any alternatives in terms of the recommendations we would make to you. Come back, we'd have an opportunity to meet with the Fish Committee before the February Commission meeting. Then we could come into the February Commission meeting. We may be in a position to recommend a consideration for your adoption, or we may be in a position to say, we need to delay until March. But stick with the timeline of trying to get it done by February, but don't put the policy out now. Give us time to make the modifications. Come back, meet with the advisors, meet with the Fish Committee, come back to the commission in January, then put it out for public review. And if we can get it done between then and February, great. If we need a little bit more time, we have that as a backup. You okay with that?
Yeah. Sounds good.
Okay.
And as you were saying that, I don't want to make things, more complicated, but this is a public document. To the extent the policy has been drafted and presented to the commission, what you all have seen is not a secret document. It is available at our website, but what we're talking about is starting the public comment process. We want to give the public a real opportunity to react to our specific proposals. So you will be seeing the specific proposal and then being given an adequate opportunity to comment.
Okay.
Commissioner Keeney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That all sounds good. I'm just curious if it came about that we would be making a decision on this in February, is it outside of protocol to allow public input at that meeting when we're making a decision on this? Or could we, because of the importance of this, I know we'll get more public input in January. I just don't want to feel like we've scrunched that at all.
Director Anderson.
My opinion is that you would need to provide for public comment at the February meeting, and that may also be at the time that we would be requesting consideration for adoption. But I think that because we wouldn't be putting it out for public review officially until the January meeting, I think it would, don't know about require. I would strongly recommend you provide for a public comment period in February before you make your decision.
Okay. Sounds right. All right. Thank you. Thanks so much, Steve and Ron and Jim. You're doing an excellent job. It's very commendable, the hard work.
Yeah, there's just a lot of passion out in the Bay. Folks have a lot on the line. I do wish to note, though, that the squeeze in March won't be with Director Anderson. Yeah. That'll be the rest of us. So just
Thanks. Thanks again.